Majority of House lawmakers have allegedly thrown their support behind presidential vet Senator Bongo and Vice Presidential contender Sara Duterte Carpio. Malacañang denies COVID-19 testing chief Vince Dizon has abandoned the administration to join the Moreno camp. We'll speak with the campaign manager of the Manila mayor, Lito Banayo, later on in the program. We'll also have PDP Laban Chairman Coco Pimentel to discuss developments in his party as well as the presidential bid of Senator Manny Pacquiao. Manila expresses outrage over the blocking of Philippine supply ships by Chinese vessels in Ayungin Shoal. And Finance Assistant Secretary Paula Alvarez joins us later on in the program as well. We're going to talk about the Philippines' participation in the recently concluded UN climate talks. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, nice to have you with us today. We begin with this story. Is the country's COVID-19 testing chief leaving the administration to join the presidential campaign of Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Domagoso? Well, as far as Malacañang is concerned, Dizon is staying put. Palace spokesman Carlo Nograles adds Dizon remains focused on government's COVID-19 response. But Moreno's campaign chief, Lito Banayo, had revealed Dizon has been on board as their deputy campaign manager since the middle of this year. Majority of House lawmakers throw their support behind presidential aspirant Senator Bongo and vice presidential hopeful Davao City Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio. That's according to Congressman Michael Aglipay, who was among the lawmakers present at Tuesday's dinner in Malacañang with President Rodrigo Duterte. Aglipay says representatives of six parties and two blocs, which make up around 240 lawmakers, have committed to support the tandem. He adds Duterte's ally, House Speaker Lord Alan Velasco, could also pull in more support. Aglipay believes that could be enough for Senator Go to beat current presidential frontrunner and Duterte Carpio's running mate, Ferdinand Marcos Jr.
I can only speak on behalf of my friend of 34 years, Speaker Lord Alan Velasco. If he can muster 85% of the congressmen to support Senator Bongo and Sara Duterte, I think that is a big factor that they commit until the end and they don't change their commitment. His father, Governor Presby Velasco, is also the president of the League of Provinces. If Governor Presby can get 85% of the governors to support Senator Bongo and Sara Duterte tandem from now until the end, I think they have more than a big chance than anybody in this game.
Marcos's party, meanwhile, brushes off the development.
If you will watch our campaign of the Partido Federal ng Pilipinas, especially under the leadership of Senator Ferdinand Marcos Jr., we just do what we have to do. We do not react. If we watch the other side, if we watch the left, if we watch the right, we cannot move on.
When President Duterte and his loyal aide, Senator Bongo, filed their certificates of candidacies for senator and president respectively, many were caught by surprise. And that's because they filed their COCs under the Pederalismo ng Dugong Dakilang Samahan Party, abandoning the ruling PDP Laban Party. For his reaction to this, we're now joined by the chairman of the PDP Laban Pacquiao faction, Senator Coco Pimentel. Senator, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us today. Kindly unmute.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for inviting me, Carmina, and magandang araw po sa lahat.
All right, so let's begin with this. How would you describe the current state of the CUSI faction? What do you think about the current state that it's in?
Well, I do not want to comment on their current state, but definitely I think they are in a very confusing situation right now. And months ago, I have stated that they have a secret plan or a hidden agenda So I do not think they will reveal what that was already anymore, because you know they never were able to execute it. So that's the problem. That's a problem when you do not properly explain your plan or the agenda, because this is politics. You're involving a political party. You're involving a lot of other people. So you better explain. You better tell them what the plan is.
What do you think what is the origin of the manifestation that we're seeing right now? Is this a manifestation of the leadership of CUSI? Is this a manifestation of the president's leadership in the party?
There is a saying that you cannot serve two masters or two or more masters. So I think this is the result. You know, he's trying to please a person and then trying to please another person. So it's not really a plan hatched from within the party or from within their group. So that's the problem. So that was my point from the very start. We PDP Laban is a political party. We come up with our own plans internally.
By he, you mean
CUSI.
Secretary CUSI.
Yeah, Secretary CUSI, most likely during the early stages, was trying to please someone, maybe the mayor of Davao City, wanting her to run for president, so that they will be in a position. In the position of an early endorser, just in case she succeeds, then maybe they will say, early on your supporters already. So and then trying to please also the incumbent president, accommodating him, trying to prolong his interest in politics, so that they will also be. Credited with his staying in power. This is a lesson that, you know, if you're a political party, come up with your own plans internally from your members and look at the best interest of the political party, not of personalities.
But couldn't the same thing be said about your faction of the party? Because here you are, you have your standard bearer abandoning PDP Laban.
No, that's wrong. Take a look at the rules. There are different rules. During the filing and during the substitution, the wording of the COMELEC regulations governing the two activities is different. So in the filing, you can choose the certificate of nomination among the parties nominating you. It is only an internal matter, because we have a rule. Most parties maybe have this rule in their constitution that when you use the certificate of nomination of another party, then you are subject to disciplinary action. But that is why our PDP Laban, the legitimate PDP Laban, who knows party history for 40 years already, we entered into an alliance agreement with PROMDI, and we issued the necessary resolutions that we are waiving some of our internal rules. Rules. While in substitution, ito na, this is not an internal rule anymore. This is a COMELEC rule regulation that the substitute must come from the party of the substituted. They must be party mates. Yun po yun. Yeah. Diba po yun?
I got it. So for all intents and purposes, Pacquiao is the standard bearer of PDP Laban, correct?
Yes.
And you have your standard bearer going to Malacañang, asking the president to form some sort of alliance. This is after everything that has happened. What do you make of that? And first of all, did he even know that he was going to do such a thing?
Number one, your version of what happened in Malacañang came from a certain camp, because the version of Senator Pacquiao is that he got invited to go to Malacañang, and then when he was there, the president also did not know what their agenda was. So they talked about Mindanao development. It was not really of asking for an alliance. So yung version po na yan is not our version, because from our source, that did not happen.
So this version came from no less than the president. Senator, are you telling us that the president was lying?
It's not accurate, because I was not there, so I am also relying on the version of a person who was there, and that was that's the version. They talked about Mindanao development, because when Senator Pacquiao was there, and he was already now facing the president, the president also said, what's our agenda? So both of them were surprised about the meeting.
Hmm. Were you surprised about the meeting? Did you know that that was going to take place, Senator?
Not beforehand.
And what do you make of it now? Should it have happened at all?
Well, it should not have happened, precisely because apparently only the bridge knew that it was that there was a meeting. The two persons who were supposed to meet did not even know what the meeting was all about.
And finally, your standard bearer has been giving away money, Senator. He has been giving away money in the guise of dispensing help to those who need it the most at this point in time. So this is happening after he has declared his intent to run for president. This is happening very near the official start of the campaign season. Tell us, how is this right, Senator Pimentel?
Well, he has been helping the poorest of the poor, or those who are most in need of financial help and other assistance, because siguro victims of calamities, and then just victims of generations of poverty since noon pa. Noon pa. Even before
iba entering, na muna yun eh.
Yes, I know. Even before entering politics. So ang gusto ko sabihin, the desire to help, hindi po ito ngayon lang lumabas dahil naka-file na ng COC. Noon pa po ito. So hindi po talaga mapigilan yung tawag ng puso niya, yung sinasabi ng puso niya sa kanya na tulungan sila eh. At saka kung mapansin niyo po, it is not a matter of policy niya na mamimigay ng pera. Doon lang po talaga sa mga nangangailangan ng tulong. So sa Batangas, for example, yun po yung mga victims ng Taal volcano explosion. He went to example ko lang, I think he went to two towns. Merong isang town wala pong pinamigay doon na ayuda o na cash. Doon sa isa, kasi andun yung mga evacuees po o yung victims ng Taal. So ganun po yun. And then when he is in a very poor community, talaga pong hindi niya mapigilan na tulungan po sila.
Okay, finally, Senator Coco, how would you explain the poor showing of your standard bearer in the early surveys?
Early surveys, it's time to forget the early surveys. Meron na po tayong mga latest surveys where we see a trend, which we have anticipated or predicted. When he announced that he was running, yung mga proclamation, yung mga official nomination po ng party, tumaas na po siya. Mm-hmm. When Senator Pacquiao filed for COC for president, tumaas din po siya. So yan po yung that is the anticipated or expected trajectory that we really anticipated. So tama po yun. We can forget about the old surveys, because ang survey po ay to guide you eh. So kung luma na po yung survey, pwede na po hindi natin gamitin yun to guide us now. Pero we can see the trajectory. Therefore, we should be happy with the upward trajectory of Senator Manny Pacquiao. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it at that. Senator Coco Pimentel there, chairperson of PDP Laban Pacquiao faction. It's becoming quite long, huh? Thank you for joining us.
You don't have to use the wing terminology, actually. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for joining us today. Appreciate it. Take care and you keep safe. All right. We have an update now coming from the Commission on Elections. It has just granted the request of presidential aspirant Ferdinand Marcos Jr. for an extension on the filing of his response to a petition seeking to cancel his certificate of candidacy. Ina Raffermina on the line now to tell us more about this. Ina, go ahead.
Casey, the camp of presidential aspirant Ferdinand Marcos Jr. confirmed to ABS-CBN News the Commission on Elections has granted their plea for extension of time to answer the first petition for cancellation of his certificate of candidacy. This pertains to the one filed by civic groups led by Task Force Detainees of the Philippines, which is now being handled by the COMELEC 2nd Division. Marcos spokesman, attorney Vic Rodriguez, said Marcos will be filing his answer in 5 to 7 days. The parole body issued formal summons last November 11, informing Marcos of the petition and giving him 5 days to respond. Lawyer for petitioners Theodore Te, in a briefer shared to journalists, says Marcos's camp acknowledged receipt of summons on November 11, thus leaving him up to the 16th to file his answer, or thus leaving him up to the 16th to file his answer. Though this appears already overtaken by events, Casey, let me just mention that petitioners opposed Marcos's motion for extension, citing the period given him is inextendable. They urged the COMELEC to prohibit Marcos from submitting his evidence and memorandum. Granting extensions while frowned upon is ultimately a discretion, though, of a quasi-judicial body such as the COMELEC and is even being practiced by the courts. Incidentally, attorney Howard Calleja, counsel for interveners in the case, said he will be filing a motion today for a speedy resolution of the case. Calleja is also lawyering for martial law survivors, led by former Bayan Muna Representative Satur Ocampo and former Gabriela Representative Lisa Maza, who filed a disqualification petition versus Marcos Jr. yesterday. These petitions against Marcos cite his tax case conviction as ground for barring him from running in the May election. Marcos's camp has repeatedly insisted these are all part of, quote, political propaganda, end of quote, intended to derail his presidential bid. In an interview with attorney Rodriguez, he said Marcos remains unfazed and continues to prepare for the official start of the campaign period in February. Meantime, on November 15, veteran lawyer Espilito Mendoza notified the COMELEC of his appearance as Marcos's lawyer, dubbed as the lawyer of last resort. Mendoza represented Marcos Jr.'s parents, the late President Ferdinand Sr. and Imelda Marcos, as well as other allies, or as well as several other allies, in various sequestration cases. Mendoza also lawyered for Fernando Poe Jr. in a citizenship case before the Supreme Court, for former President Gloria Arroyo in her plunder case over Philippine charity sweepstakes funds, for former Senate President Juan Ponce Enrile and Senator Bong Revilla involving the pork barrel scam, and for former President Joseph Estrada during his impeachment trial. And that is our latest election update. Ina Raffermina, ABS-CBN News. AC.
Thanks a lot, Ina. Take care and you keep safe. And from there, we're going to go back to our top story on COVID-19 testing chief Vince Dizon supposedly leaving the administration and joining the campaign of Manila Mayor Isko Moreno. Moreno's campaign manager, Mr. Lito Banayo, now joins us on the program for more on this. So the palace, Mr. Banayo, good afternoon to you. Thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Mina. Good afternoon.
All right. So the palace denying your claim that Vince Dizon is leaving. In fact, they're saying he's staying put. What is the truth?
We fully respect the intent of Secretary Vince Dizon to meanwhile assist Secretary Carlito Galvez in the IATF vaccination drive, knowing very well that it is important for us to turn this around as soon as possible. But we also will welcome Secretary Dizon into our campaign team when we have reached population immunity, and which has already been reached in the city of Manila and hopefully in the next few weeks in the National Capital Region.
Yep. So what happened? he is not going to join you yet? What about your previous statements that he was actually helping you already, middle of this year?
Yes, but I think he was, you know, he, there's still unfinished business insofar as the vaccination drive or the vaccination effort is concerned. And so we fully respect that and we support that, as that is very important for us, all of us in this country.
What did he tell you? Why did he have to, I don't know, would you call it backtracking on his commitment with you?
No, there is no backtracking on that commitment. No. It's just that there are certain efforts that have to be finished, no, insofar as the vaccination drive is concerned. And he wants to finish that task first.
Still in all, would you still stand by your previous statements that he was actually helping you while still in the administration?
Yes, I constantly sought his advice and so did Mayor Scoboreno, sought his advice. And we consulted him on a lot of matters, especially on surveys, on research design and focus group discussions.
How did you convince the secretary to join your camp eventually? What's the reason behind it?
Carmina, I'm in my 70s. I'm in my early 70s. And, you know, being, you know, running a national campaign isn't that easy for me, you know, especially with a hyperactive a candidate like Mayor Isko Moreno. And so I asked, it was I who asked Secretary Vince, being a personal friend, to help me out. And having met Secretary, I mean, having met Mayor Isko and knowing Mayor Isko's program of government and his advocacies, he signed up with us. But, you know, because of his efforts, which are very important in the vaccination drive, you know, we understand his predicament at this particular point in time.
This predicament, though, will have this predicament, though, will be solved eventually. And the resolution to that is that he is going to join your camp. Is that clear to you and him?
Definitely, yes.
All right. Now, it seems to us that the relationship was there even before politics came in. Is that correct?
The relationship between me and Vince, yes. We've been for a long time.
Okay.
Friends for a long time. It's basically family as far as I'm concerned.
All right. It seems to us, Mr. Banayo, based on your statements this afternoon, that there was a point wherein the secretary was serving two masters at the same time, helping you while still being part of this administration. How is that not a concern to you?
Politics is different from the vaccination effort, no? That is non-political. He has served the country very well in so far as that and other concerns such as the BCDA and the flagship projects are concerned. No? So that is not a problem. No? Mm-hmm. After all, he was appointed by President Duterte and President Duterte's term is about to end. No? So that is not a problem whatsoever. In the same way that I was also appointed by President Duterte, if you recall, and I parted ways when I, you know, My work is not as MECO chairman, is not as vital to the nation as Secretary Vince's work in the vaccination drive.
And when is the official date of engagement for Secretary Vince and your camp?
We will continue talking to him about that. No? Actually, as I said earlier, the vaccination effort has more or less been turned around, at least insofar as NCR is concerned.
Mm. All right. And finally, Mr. Banayo, will it stop with Secretary Vince Dison, or are there others who will be joining HQ of Isko Moreno from the administration?
Well, I do not know about that. No? The point is, Mayor Isko can work with anybody, provided they believe in the same advocacies, the same principles. No? So in the same way that we have people in our campaign team already, who used to work for other principals in the past, no? Including President Pinoy, no? President Pinoy, for that matter.
I also hear that some people allied with Congressman Alan Peter Cayetano have also jumped ship and are now helping you?
No, not necessarily. These are people who used to work for him when he was senator and who then worked for sometimes in the private sector. And I recruited them to be in the advanced teams, you know, the people who go to the campaign sorties in advance, so, to make arrangements about physical arrangements. Not top officials, not chief of staff level.
Understand. And also, before we got you in, there was a claim made by Congressman Mike Aglipay that majority of the House lawmakers have vowed to support Senator Bongo for president and Mayor Sara Duterte Carpio for vice president. How might that impact your campaign, Mr. Banayo?
It will not impact our campaign in any way whatsoever. No. I mean, at the end of the day, you apply to be president, you apply directly to the people. No? It's not about political machinery. I just want to remind those congressmen, for instance, that they were nowhere at all when Mayor Rodrigo Duterte of Davao started his campaign. None whatsoever except the people from Davao. No? And he is now president of the Philippines. So, I never really give that much importance, no, to those fleeting, temporary alliances.
All right, we're going to have to leave it at that. Mr. Dito Banayo there, campaign manager of Manila Mayor Isko Moreno, is gunning for the top post of the country. Thanks a lot for joining us this afternoon. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Right, from there, a human rights group urges the Philippine government to continue pursuing cases against the Marcos family's ill-gotten wealth. This statement from the International Coalition for Human Rights in the Philippines comes as the country marks the fifth anniversary of the controversial burial of the late dictator Ferdinand Marcos at the National Heroes Cemetery. The group asserts the fruits of that alleged plunder are now supporting the presidential aspirations of Marcos Jr. For a human rights lawyer, Marcos's burial at the Libingan ng Mga Bayani never provided Filipinos that closure Duterte had hoped for when he allowed it to happen. Attorney Shel Diocno said, for there to be closure, the Marcoses must admit their atrocities and be held accountable. He adds the possible return of the Marcoses to power is a sign that the Philippine justice system has failed.
I think it's a reflection of the failings of our justice system and the fact that up to now, some of the cases against the Marcoses are still pending despite the so many decades that have elapsed. There should have been closure by at least our courts many, many years ago. And I'm wondering why it's taking so long for justice to happen when all the facts are in and all that's needed is a decision by the higher courts.
The Marcoses faced unresolved cases after their fall in 1986. Wednesday also marked the 40th anniversary of the deadly collapse of the Manila Film Center, which was a project of then-First Lady Imelda Marcos. Labor leader and presidential aspirant Leody de Guzman led the candle lighting ceremony in order make that in honor of the workers who died at the construction site. De Guzman expressed confidence voters will reject the presidential bid of Marcos Jr. and his running mate, Sara Duterte Carpio.
Wala ko. Marami nang nawala. Marami nang nawala doon sa palpak na pamumuno ni Duterte sa nakalipas na halos 6 na taon. Sa palpak at marahas na pamumuno. Kaya tingin ko ay lumit na lang lumit ang bilang noon. At saka lumalakas yung kilusa ng pagpigil sa pagbalik ng mga Duterte at ng mga Marcoses sa ating bayan. Kaya malaki ang aking kumpiyansa na hindi mahahadlangan ng taong bayan ang mga katulad na ni Marcos at ni Duterte na ang paraan ay marahas na pamumuno, pagnanakaw at kalawalaan ng pagkilala sa karapatang pantao.
We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, Manila's top diplomat outraged over reports of another maritime incident between Philippine and Chinese vessels. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. So with Dateline Philippines, here's another look at our headlines of this noon. Majority of House lawmakers have allegedly thrown their support behind presidential bet Senator Bongo and presidential contender Sara Duterte. Malacanang denies COVID-19 testing chief Vince Dizon has abandoned the administration to join the Moreno camp, but Moreno's campaign manager, Lito Banayo, says Dizon will wrap up his work in government's COVID response before eventually joining them. And Manila expresses outrage over the blocking of Philippine supply ships by Chinese vessels in Ayungin Shoal. Back with more news, another clash between the Philippines and China in the West Philippine Sea. Manila's Foreign Affairs Department says Chinese Coast Guard vessels blocked and turned water cannons on two Philippine supply boats on the way to the Ayungin Shoal Tuesday. According to Secretary Teodoro Loxin Jr., no one was hurt, but the boats had to abort their mission. They were supposed to transport food supplies to military personnel in the area. Loxin says he has already conveyed his condemnation of the incident to China's ambassador to the Philippines and to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Beijing. The Duterte administration has so far filed over 200 diplomatic notes against China over its continuing incursions in the country's waters. European countries on high alert with COVID-19 cases across the region on the rise once again. In Belgium, authorities mandated the wider use of masks and enforced work-from-home policies. That's as cases again spiked in the country's fourth wave of infections. Everyone aged 10 and above will need to wear a mask except when seated in indoor venues such as cafes and restaurants. In the Netherlands, COVID-19 tests are running short as the country logged over 20,000 new infections for the second day in a row. Hospital admissions also rising due to the surge that is largely blamed on the easing of social distancing and other pandemic measures. France also seeing a jump in hospital admissions on Wednesday. The country reported over 20,000 new cases in one day for the first time since August. The government is banking on the high vaccination rate to curb the number of COVID patients in hospitals. The Philippines' COVID-19 death toll has now surpassed 46,000. That's after the health department recorded 309 deaths Wednesday. 1,190 new infections and over 2,000 more recoveries were also tallied. The country's COVID positivity rate has fallen further to 3.5%. The head of the Philippines' vaccine expert panel assures the public recipients of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine can still get that same brand for a booster shot. On Wednesday, Dr. Edsel Salvana of the Health Department's Technical Working Group urged those who got AstraZeneca for their primary series to use vaccines from other brands due to a possible drop in efficacy. But Dr. Nina Gloriani asserts this is just a theoretical risk.
Kaya theoretical ang sinabi po ng DOST-DEP. Theoretical possibility po. Pero we recommended na pwede rin po siyang ibigay as a booster dose. homologous, Astra, Asa. Nakalista po yun doon sa aming rekomendasyon sa FDA.
The Senate deliberations on the proposed 2022 national budget postponed until next week. That's after Defense Secretary Delphine Lorenzana, who attended Tuesday's hearing on his agency's budget, tested positive for COVID-19. He also contracted the disease back in April. Senate President Vicente Soto III says the plenary debates on the budget will resume Monday, following a disinfection of the Senate premises and the testing of those who had close contact with Lorenzana. Before the suspension of the budget hearings, senators had approved the budgets of the Health Department, National Housing Authority, and the Commission on Elections. World news, the Canadian province of British Columbia is placed under a state of emergency following massive floods. At least one person is confirmed dead, but authorities expect the death toll to rise in the coming days. 18,000 people have been displaced. The massive floods and landslides have destroyed roads, downed power lines, and left several mountain towns isolated. The European Union proposes a law aimed at curbing the importation of goods linked to deforestation. The measure sets mandatory due diligence rules for importers of specific products into the EU, including soy, beef, and coffee. Companies will have to show if the goods are produced in accordance with the laws of the producing country. They must also prove the products were not grown on deforested or degraded land.
Our deforestation regulation answers citizens' call to minimize the European contribution to deforestation and to promote sustainable consumption. Between 1990 and last year, we've lost 420 million hectares of forest. That's an area larger than the European Union. EU demand for commodities like palm oil, soy, wood, beef, cocoa, and coffee are strong drivers of deforestation. More and more citizens want us to put an end to this. Our proposal, therefore, creates a strong due diligence system.
The proposed law comes after world leaders from countries including Brazil, China, and Malaysia vowed to end deforestation by year 2030 during the COP26 summit. In the recently concluded UN climate talks in Glasgow, the Philippine delegation pushed for more climate finance for vulnerable countries. Delegation head Finance Secretary Carlos Dominguez likewise presented a roadmap to finance green investments. And here to talk to us about this is Finance Assistant Secretary Paula Alvarez. Assistant Secretary, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Yes. Hi, good afternoon, Carmina, and thank you for having us.
All right. Back from COP26, although you're still there in Europe as we speak, but what does the Philippines have to show for its participation there? Tell us more about it.
Okay, so as you understand, in the COP, there are the negotiations proper, and you have side events that complement the negotiation. So in the high-level delegations meeting, Secretary Dominguez has been pushing for a definition of climate finance to include three things. So he was pushing that this should include grants for capacity building, investments, and subsidies to those that will be affected. He also urged the developed countries to use the multilateral development banks as a seal of good housekeeping. So this is one of the things that we have been pushing, because even with the negotiations in the COP, the definition of climate finance has yet to be determined. And actually, the decision for this matter actually provides that it would be a continuous discussion until COP27. So because we are a highly vulnerable country, we need to come up with other ways for us to fund our investment and financing needs.
Yeah. So even without the predetermination of what actually climate finance or how it would look like for different countries, in the Philippines, though, is our infrastructure there? Are we prepared to receive this kind of finance?
Yes. So what we're looking at is how do we utilize the existing financial tools? So one of them is our capital markets, our Philippine Stock Exchange, as well as our Securities and Exchange Commission and our banking, our central bank. they're very interested, or they're moving ahead. They're moving forward. They have their sustainable finance roadmaps, and they have their sustainability standards as well. So what we want to do is, independent of what's going on in the COP negotiations, we go ahead with policies that would put in place the necessary environment for us to have investments towards these types of projects.
Do you have enough time, though, to put these in place? This administration only has a few more months left in its lifetime.
Yes. So Secretary Dominguez has continually said that the government will work until the last day, or until we actually turn over in June. So the BSP also, I think Governor Ben Jokno would be staying even after the current administration, because his term actually is a fixed term. So it moves even after that. So that's going to move forward, as well as for the SEC and other government agencies that have fixed terms. They're still moving ahead with these initiatives.
Well, what do you say to the criticism that, you know, the commitments were half-baked, that you could have committed more, but you didn't? What do you say to that kind of an impression when people are talking about the participation of the Philippines in COP26? Assistant Secretary.
Yes. So I think what we need to understand is that these commitments actually cut across all government agencies. And when we commit something, what the Philippines wants to do is we actually want to make it implementable. So issues, for example, like in the Energy Department, again, we say this is something sensitive, and we can't just commit without actually having a foundation for us to move forward with these types of projects. I'll give you an example. So developed countries have committed since 2015 to mobilize $100 billion every year until 2020 to provide developing countries financing support for mitigation and adaptation. We have yet to see that. They committed for technology transfer and capacity building. We haven't seen that. So if we commit, for example, to limit our investments in industries that require economic development, and they don't push forward with their commitments, where does that leave us? So it's a matter of protecting, I think, our national interest. So we need to balance economic growth and sustainability. So what we are trying to convey is we're doing everything we can to fulfill our commitments. But at the same time, we need to first take responsibility of the economic situation in the country. So it's a balancing act for us.
For example, when you talk about the issue of loss and damage finance, you know, some have said that you could have pushed more regarding that, but you didn't. Well, what might be the reason behind that?
We were pushing for loss and damage. We actually wanted to push for the Yusek Wimpy Fuentebella was the one heading that work stream. And we were actually pushing for the implementation already, or the creation of the loss and damage funding source. But then we are going up against developed countries. Okay, so in the COP, how negotiations work is different countries group themselves together. And unfortunately, the Philippines is only a member of the G77 and China group, which comprises 137 countries. India is there, China is there, Russia is there. So other countries, for example, developed countries, EU, US, Canada, Australia, Switzerland, they group themselves together and they're known as the umbrella group. Whatever we propose, they block them or they water it down. So, for example, if you're in the Philippines, how do you go up against a group of developed countries who just, honestly speaking, we haven't come up to any concrete terms, because whatever developing countries propose, they counter. And in the COP negotiations, it has to be consensus. Everyone has to agree. And I think that's very difficult for developing countries to push forward, especially for us, if we're only a member of one negotiating bloc that is composed of 137 countries.
Which further underscores what you said earlier, that, you know, all our climate action here at home should not necessarily be hinged on what they're going to do. We have to be able to pave that path ourselves.
Yes, correct. Because they want to have long-term climate finance discussion until 2027. Meanwhile, it's 2021 and we're experiencing adverse effects of climate change. So we can't wait until 2027 when they decide what the definition would be, because we have to act now. That's why we're moving ahead with different policies that we can actually do.
Tell me something, though. What is the role? I mean, I'm talking to you as a representative of the finance department, your part of government. But tell me something. What is the role of civil society organizations in achieving goals and in the pursuit of climate action here in the country?
Okay. So I think civil society organizations actually work with this local communities, and they have their different initiatives. So it would depend on what kind of civil society organization you are. So I think an issue that we're leading on to is the non-attendance in the actual delegation of civil society organizations. So for this time, the Department of Finance is exercising oversight over the Climate Change Commission. So one of the issues that we previously heard is that when we included non-government participants in the actual delegation, there were issues on commitments made and representations made without authority with the implementing agencies back at home. So this is a very sensitive issue, because we can't commit something internationally without getting authority from the implementing agencies back at home, because that would be a huge problem. You can't implement something without asking the people who are going to implement them whether or not they can do that. So it's a matter of accountability and the responsibility of putting national interests first. But I think these issues are something that we now see, and we now know how to move forward with them, like up to what extent civil society organizations can participate in the future.
Is this the reason why you didn't meet with CSOs while you were in Glasgow, Assistant Secretary?
No, actually, Secretary Dominguez really had a very packed schedule. So we had meetings with Minister Milling, who is the new Member of Parliament for Asia. So he had meetings with that. And then he also had meetings with other World Bank executives. He also had a meeting with the Rockefeller Foundation. So he was working on other events that are outside of the COP so that we could maximize his time there.
So what? But the secretary also presented a roadmap to climate finance, correct? What will be the role, for example, of CSOs in the implementation of this roadmap? Do you see them as a necessary ally to attain the goals for the Philippines, at least when it comes to climate action, Assistant Secretary?
Yeah, of course. Yes, of course they have a participation. I think their role could be in the oversight of, for example, businesses, if they actually stick to the standards that are put in place. We have civil society organizations who check whether projects that claim to be environmental are actually environmental. We have CSOs who look into how local communities are affected. And these are valuable opinions. However, when it comes to international affairs, I think we have to come up with a more coherent strategy, wherein you ask the current administration first how they want to move forward, because there are issues that are not open to everyone. You know, there are, when you study the law, there are state secrets, there are things that are of public consumption, and there are issues of administrative issues. So we need to look into the proper proper work stream of where they should be, as opposed to, you know, just having a fight with government and accusing them of not listening to what they have to say. Actually, we received all their position papers and we took them into account. So I think that's, and when we crafted the NDC, we also gave them the opportunity to air their concerns.
Hmm. All right. Now, we haven't even taken a breath yet since the conclusion of COP26, and already people are working towards the next COP in Egypt. Mm-hmm. So if it is very clear that it's going to be that it was climate finance in COP26, that was really the core message. The importance of climate finance was the core message of COP26. What do you think should be the next focus in COP27? And what issues are we going to bring there as a vulnerable country?
Yes. So what we're trying to look into is how to create more allies, because, again, we're only a member of the G77 in China, but it's quite problematic because the different negotiating blocks are, for example, small island developing states. We can't be included there because we're not a small island. We also have the least developed countries group, and we can't be a part of that as well. So what we're trying to look into is how the B20 and the Climate Vulnerable Forum could play a better role, even if they're not a negotiating bloc, and how we could work with country allies, for example, that are similarly situated that could help us. We are also looking into how, for example, previous government people like Attorney Vice, for example, Yu, who is the Secretariat of the G77 in China, who is a Filipino as well, how they could work with us, and also for Filipinos in the UN that have national interest in mind. So we're looking into how these people could help government in playing a better role in the COP negotiations.
All right. Thanks a lot, Assistant Secretary of the Finance Department, Paola Alvarez there. Appreciate you coming to the show. Thanks. And you take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines Podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Playback this newscast too on ANZ's YouTube channel and on ANZ 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.